Get ready for Ready Radio with Doug and Amy. It's emergency preparedness for everyone. Brought to you by TruPrep. For all your prepping needs, visit TruPrep online at truprep.com or visit a TruPrep store in Roswell or Marietta. Listen in as Doug and Amy provide helpful tips on how to get ready for anything that comes your way. And now, your hosts, Doug and Amy.
Welcome, everybody. You're listening to Ready Radio. I'm Doug. Amy's here in studio with me, and today we're going to deviate a little bit. I know that our focus is always emergency preparedness and what to do if there's an earthquake, what to do if there's a super volcano, what to do if the zombies come. But I want to talk a little bit broader today. And I know that this may seem a little bit off the reservation for some people, but I think that it's time that we had a frank discussion about family values and the way this country is going. And I think that this is an important topic for preppers as well as for everybody out there in the general community. And the reason is why are we prepping? You know, we talk every week that you need to put up your freeze-dried food, you need to have water filtration, you need to have a plan, you need to have an emergency kit, you need to have good first aid. But why are we doing this? And to me, the reason that I got into prepping is not because I am afraid of a super volcano going off in downtown Atlanta and fleeing for my life. It's because I know that there are going to be unexpected things that happen to my family. And as we go through getting ready for protecting our loved ones, the underlying theme, I think the real reason that we do what we do is out of love for our family members and trying to keep them safe and trying to keep them in the best way possible so that they don't have disruptions, so that they have normalcy in their daily lives, no matter what happens.
Yep. Yeah, I'm right there with you, Doug. I think that me personally, one of the huge reasons that I got into emergency preparedness is primarily because of my family. And if I were single and if it was, you know, just me, to be honest, I think I'd just be out seeing the world and taking vacations. I don't think I'd be so concerned about putting food away, you know, for myself. I think I'd probably be able to manage. But yeah, I mean, that's the reason why. And you're grinning,
I'm
so
grinning.
I can't wait to see what you say after.
Last week, you were telling us that you were ready to kick everybody out of the house, buy a micro house, and hit the road anyway.
Yeah,
so
it's still up for debate.
I mean, it'd be a very tenuous string for you to if you were by yourself to hit the open road.
Oh heck, I'd do it in a heartbeat. But here's the thing, you know, I'm not by myself. To be honest with you, Doug, I'm the oldest of five. I have a lot of siblings. I have a lot of nieces and nephews. My parents are still living. Mm-hmm. My wonderful husband and my kids. And my kids are actually late teens, early 20s. And now I'm looking into the future of grandchildren and grandbabies. And so that's something else that I'm taking into consideration. So, you know, it's not just me. And if it were, I would have my teeny tiny house and I would see the world, but it's not. And the situation that I'm living in, I am the type of person, if you come to my house, you're going to get fed. You know, I'm the caregiver. And
I remember our Thanksgiving show. You made that really clear about how you put out the big spread and the wonderful food.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. So, but that's the thing. I mean, if something were to happen, I mean, it would just the thought and the vision of something happening where, you know, where there was absolute chaos and riots and there was no food and people were killing each other over a can of, you know, of whatever, beans or something, it would just break my heart that I wouldn't be able to provide for my family. So that's a huge reason why I prep.
Did you ever see the Comcast commercial? You know how Comcast has these commercials where it's kind of like the give a mouse a cookie spiel that starts off small and it gets worse and worse and worse until finally something horrible is happening at the end.
Oh, yeah.
Don't get cable.
Right.
Because they had one where the guy got cable and the next thing you know, at the end of the commercial, his dad is getting punched in the stomach over a can of beans.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Your analogy there brought that to my mind because I'm mm-hmm. sitting here thinking, yeah, you know, that's exactly what we fear is. We fear, you know, a societal collapse. We fear something horrible happening and our family being in the midst of it, and we want to protect them. We want to keep them from having anything like that happen. But it doesn't have to be societal collapse that hurts your family. It can be something as simple as a job loss.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, what are you going to do? I mean, how do you care for them? Well, you prepare. But what my point is that all of those preparations come from something deeper. It's not about preparing. It's about love.
Mm-hmm.
It's about family values. It's about pulling together. It's about being a cohesive unit in society. And great societies are built on the backs of the family. And here we are coming into the 21st century, and the family is under attack from every corner. And I'm not going to sit here and say, well, you know, you need a traditional modern nuclear family of a husband, a wife, 2.5 kids, a dog, and a cat in order for it to be a family. I don't believe that. I think a family is built on love. And if you love somebody and you're there and you're committed and you're taking care of them, that is your family. And it could be as small as a nuclear family. It could be as small as a single mother and her child. Or it can be as large as your family with 5 siblings and all of their kids and future grandkids and everybody under the sun. It's still a family. But what I see happening is a direct frontal assault on the idea of a loving family, of people who are not accountable to anyone else, who take care of their own, and who are a cohesive unit. I see that society is moving more and more towards a social type of unit where it's not, I mean, oh my goodness, I remember a blurb a while back where somebody in Washington said, people need to realize that their children are not theirs to do with as they please.
Oh, my.
Well, that struck a chord with me. And I think that that is one of the underpinning new philosophies that is out in our world now, that your kids are part of a public school system and there's state oversight and they are making the choices on what they learn and how they are brought up more than the family. And if the family is teaching something that the state doesn't like, then there's a problem and the state needs to get involved and correct it. Mm-hmm. That's a terrifying prospect. Yep. That's the fundamental underpinnings of the family is parents raising their children in the way that they ought to go. And that's important. But in a broader perspective, families are under assault all the time from our criminal justice system, from even situational comedies on TV. You watch sitcoms and you see an undermining of gender roles. You see an attack on traditional values. Most of the family sitcoms you see now don't promote any kind of value system. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't see... It's relatively recent. I mean, you look at... you don't have to go all the way back to the Andy Griffith Show. You can go to the Cosby Show in the 80s. You can even go to Family Matters in the early 90s. I mean, there was definitely comedic aspects to the show. But at the end, you saw a family unit that pulled together and everyone respected the father and had honor for the mother. And they pulled together and they were a cohesive unit. But that's really under assault these days.
Yeah, I'm on board with you. A really good friend of mine actually lost custody of his sons. And let me tell you, it's because of the it happened today. If it happened 10 years or 20 years ago, would not have happened. But he is the most God-loving, wonderful man that I know. He is. I mean, I actually look up to this man. I think mm-hmm. he's fantastic. But, you know, I mean, he believes the whole spare the rod, spoil the child kind of thing. And mm-hmm. and this child needed a butt whooping, mm-hmm. and he got it. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, if it weren't for butt whoopings, my husband would not be the man he is today. Let me tell you. And he looks back and he laughs about it. And he was like, oh, yeah, let me tell you what I deserved back when I was a kid. And he did. I mean, you put your kids straight.
Yes.
And I know that's a very controversial topic about whether to spank or whether not to. Well, this good friend of mine... left a little mark on his son. Very quickly did his brother pull out a cell phone camera and take a picture of this. Mm-hmm. So there's evidence, and mm-hmm. you know what this is like being a lawyer. I think I can see your wheels turning, and it turned very, very ugly. Very, very quickly. Yes, it did. Those kids were yanked from his house, and they were put into the house of their mother, who... how do I say this nicely? Is not a good situation for those kids.
Right.
And the way they're being brought up is not in their best interest at all.
It's interesting you phrase it that way, because that is the judge's obligation in all family matters, is to find the best interest of the child. But I don't think that that's really the way that most cases end up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm sure you see this firsthand.
Yeah.
Also.
I've seen a lot of... Yes.
But, and the thing is, a lot of times people need to mind their own business. Now, there are situations where kids need to be rescued.
Well, there's honest abuse out there.
Absolutely, there's honest abuse. But then there's on the opposite end of the spectrum, there's micromanaging. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember when they were, it was on the news, it had been some time ago, where they wanted to take a child out of the home because he was obese. And, oh my gosh, can you imagine taking a child away from his parents and putting him in the system? as, oh, that's going to fix them.
Well, it goes back to the mindset I was saying earlier, that the family is not the fundamental structure that society is. And if a family isn't raising the child to societal norms, then yes, they're not fulfilling their part of the social contract, and society will take the child away.
Right.
Whereas what the message needs to be is that the family is the underpinning of everything, and society exists to serve the family. Now, if there's real abuse going on, if someone's in danger, yes, we step in as a group of people.
Right.
You know, we saddle up our horses and draw a firm line in the sand. But we, as a society, are there to serve families. Families are not there to serve a society. And this is, you know, John F. Kennedy saying, ask not what you can, your country can do for you, you can do for your country. I think that that's a noble sentiment in a vacuum, but we've taken that kind of idea to an extreme where we have become servants of the state. And if we're creating the next generation of state servants, if we're not doing it the way they want, they step in. When we come back from break, I'm going to tell you about a case I heard about in Hawaii just this week where a father was had criminal charges pressed against him for disciplining his son. You're listening to Ready Radio on News Talk 1160, the Talk of the Town.
And now, back to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy.
Welcome back, folks. When we took our break, I was telling you guys that we were going to talk a little bit about a new case out of Hawaii that I had just heard about. And this, I was blown away. The father was convicted of child abuse for disciplining his son. What had happened, and I'm not going to use names or anything, but this, if you do a Google search, it'll come up from because it was within the last 10 days. The son had gotten into some trouble at school, and the school had called the father and said, you have to come and pick up your son. He's being sent home early. So, and we're not talking a kindergartner. We're talking, you know, a boy who is old enough to fend for himself for a little while, right?
Do you know if it was like elementary, middle, or high school?
I think it was middle school.
Okay.
To the best of my knowledge. So, I mean.
Oh, they're just rotten anyway.
They are. Yeah, for sure. But so the father goes to the school and he demands his son tell him exactly what happened and what was going on. And like most kids who are caught with their hand in the candy jar, the kid clammed up, wouldn't talk to him. Mm-hmm. So dad said, all right, well, if you aren't going to tell me, then you get to walk home. And he had the kid walk home. It was a mile away.
Okay.
And he was charged with child abuse for making the child walk a mile to the house.
Tell me you're kidding.
No. And convicted and put on a year's probation and levied a fine against.
Wait, where was did the kid have to walk through, like, you know,
molten
alligators?
Molten lava. It is Hawaii. There might have been molten lava. No. Yeah. It was just walking home on a nice Hawaii summer day. Can you imagine child abuse for making a child walk a mile?
That doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't.
At all.
But a conviction. A conviction was levied against this guy. I was thunderstruck. And that's been weighing on my mind ever since I heard it. And that's really why I wanted to delve into this topic today, is because I hear stories of parents whose children are ripped from their home on the barest allegations. I have defended people who have had, you know, the state step in and ruin their family or attempt to. And we've had to fight tooth and nail just to have the children reunited with their parents when the allegations of abuse are at best tenuous. And then you hear there's the other aspect. You know, you get to hear the horror stories of the kid, you know, who had called, you know, the police 20 times and nothing was ever done.
Right.
And then, you know, that kid dies or something horrible.
Well, and it happened here recently, wasn't it? Here locally, that the little girl who was starved to death.
Well, there was. I'm not familiar with that, but I am familiar with a case down in Valdosta, which also got me livid, where a upper elementary school student, I want to say fifth or sixth grader, died in the school when he was rolled up in a gym mat.
Oh, and I thought that was a high schooler, wasn't it? I think that was high school.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And I mean, the kid died.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're suing the school board down there for an unsafe condition, but no criminal charges, nothing was pressed. And what jumps to my mind is bullying. I mean, here you got someone who ended up in a gym mat with no one helping him, no one cared.
Yeah.
I mean, it's horrible. But these stories, which are very rare, are used to justify the increasing expansion of state power to step into the family, yes, rip children out on bare allegations, and really destroy. I mean, it's one thing, the impact on the children, to have somebody come and take them away from their home. That is tremendous. But what people don't realize is the impact on the parent to have their children taken away when they have not done anything wrong.
Yeah, you know, I really wonder how much, it seems like there's so much stress, you know, how much of this relates around stress. And I'm just thinking about, you know, the family units, and we are, you know, really focusing on, you know, the family values, and one of the reasons why we do prepare, because we love them. But the thing is, I mean, you know, in a two-income household, when parents are gone constantly, and, you know, we have the daycares raising our kids, and we have the school systems, mm-hmm, raising our kids, instead of the government jumping in to try to fix things, it seems like really what we need to focus is how can we strengthen the family units, and that's really what the focus needs to be.
And I agree completely. I think that is a great point, that the way to circumvent a lot of these problems is to have a strong family to begin with, and that goes multi-generationally. If you're fighting with your parents, then they get involved in your kid's life, and they don't think that you're fit, and next thing you know, you've got this huge maelstrom brewing, and somebody eventually goes to the authorities because everyone believes the government will wave a magic wand and set everything right for them. I mean, that's, trust me, 10 years of doing this as an attorney, I have seen that over and over. People say, well, I'm in the right, so the government will figure it out. When, yeah, give me that cockeyed look there. When has the government ever come out and fixed things and they were better off than they were before? I believe in what Reagan said, that government is not the solution for your problems. Government is the problem.
Right.
We solve our problems best when we solve them ourselves. I was in court in Gwinnett County recently, and one of the wisest judges I have ever had the pleasure to listen to got up and pontificated in front of all of these landlord-tenant issues that were going on in front of him, and he said, look, there's a bar right there. You can't see it, but I see it clear as day. It separates me from you. When you're on your side of the bar, you can do whatever you want. You can work it out till everybody's happy and it's fixed. You step on my side of the bar, and I will make a choice that you could not make, and it will be one that nobody likes.
Very wise.
That is what happens. When you go to court, I'm going to steal a line from one of my favorite movies, True Grit. If I take it to law, you're going to lose. I don't care who wins. You will lose. Mm-hmm. But people think that the government will step in and fix it. They think that if they call DFACS, that they're going to come in and side with somebody and make it all better and it'll all be fine. But that's not the way it works. It doesn't work that way for anybody. Nobody comes out ahead. It's much better if you can work out things on your own. Now, there are situations. There is real abuse when that cannot happen, where there's no compromise, where it's a dangerous situation, where people's lives, safety, mental health are on the line, and yes, you have to remove them from the situation. There are sick people out there. I've been a prosecutor. I've been a criminal defense attorney. I have met them. There are people who are just wretched creatures who we do not understand why they exist in this world, but they do. And those are the people that you have to bring down the unlimited power of the state to crush. Mm-hmm. But we've gotten to a point where we are micromanaged, exactly as you put it. We are micromanaged in our daily lives and our families and our ways that we do things. Everything, it takes a village now, and the village is, I'm afraid, becoming run by the inmates of the asylum.
Yeah, and now we have parents who are afraid to discipline their children.
And what is that leading to, the type of children who are being created?
Oh, they're rotten. confused. I mean, they are learning now how to be parents, and it's a vicious cycle. And so when they grow up and their parents, they're going to mock what their parents did. And I don't know. You know, I wonder if it's going to get worse. I wonder if this generation, like I said, I have, you know, with my kids being late teens and early 20s, and I'm, you know, with the children that they're going to be bringing up. Now, of course, I really hope and pray that I've been a good parent and you know, they'll model some of the behavior that they're learning from me. But you know, it just really makes me wonder if things get so bad and they're looking at their kids and they're like, I've got these spoiled, rotten little brats. I mean, do you think they'll ever turn that around? Do you think they're ever going to have this eye-opening event? I mean, what would it take to bring family values back into the house? And, you know, just the love and the respect between the parents, and how does that come from? How does that blossom out of a bad situation, I wonder?
Talking about an eye-opening event, I mean, you've given me a lot of different aspects of this. I want to focus on that for just a second. Yes, there may very well be an eye-opening event. There may be a point where these kids' future parents hit rock bottom and say, yeah, we're in trouble. The wheel came off the car. But the problem is that they don't know what to do.
Right.
And they won't know what to do. And they'll be looking around saying, help me, help me, help me.
Right. Yeah, and there's only one Dr. Phil show. So.
Well, the problem, who's going to step in and say, we'll help you, we'll take care of the kids, we'll take care of you, we'll take care of everything. What's the entity that does that when it's the last resort?
Yeah, or that tries,
yeah,
I suppose.
Well, it's the one that wants the most power, mm-hmm. and power comes from having people dependent on you, and the government is going to step in and say, we'll take care of that. You don't want to have your kids in the house all day? We'll take care of that. Mm-hmm. You can send them to public school, and we will take care of them for 7 hours a day, and we'll feed them two of the meals. You don't have to worry about it. We'll take care of that. And when they come home, you can plop them in front of the TV and watch the TV and then put them right to bed, and you don't have to even deal with them. And they'll learn everything we want them to learn. And who are they going to become? Who are they going to trust? When push comes to shove, when the message out is see something, say something, mm-hmm. who are their loyalties going to be?
Yeah, well, they'll be little government minions.
And they're not going mm-hmm. to be invested in the family. You read 1984, you read A Brave New World. It all starts with the children. It always has to. Yeah, that's the battle, is for the minds of the children. You have adults who hit, you know, kind of the waking up point, you know, where they take the green pill and they realize mm-hmm. that the system is not sustainable.
Right. A lot of times it's too late when they do have that moment.
But yeah. they're so far along, and they're so few at that point. So many people have had the wool pulled over their eyes that it doesn't really make a difference. And we try. We reach out. We try to tell people, you've got to be ready. You've got to be prepared. You've got to be self-sufficient. You need to be Jeffersonian. You need to raise your own food. You need to be in touch with the land. We try to reach out to people to get to them to realize the importance of all this. And there are good people who wake up and hear our message and hear a message of other talk show hosts and bloggers and people who are fighting the good fight to get this message out there. But we are few and far between, because in a world where amusement is the goal, to not have to think, and they're being brought up that way. So how do you fight that? You've got to start with your children and your future children. I mean, we've got people listening right now who don't have kids but will someday. You've got to start preparing for that. This is a sacred charge. To be a parent is the highest calling that you could ever have. It is the most important job you will ever do. And what you leave behind in your children is your legacy. What you do at work, it may be, I don't care if you are the president of the United States, what you do at work is never more important than what you do for your children.
Yeah, I'm right on board with you. And, you know, and just one of the things, when our kids are so little, when we see them, you know, we just, I don't know, sometimes we think they'll be that little forever, or they'll be little kids forever. But what we have to do is actually look past, you know, their drooling little faces and their skint up little knees, and we have to see them as their future, and we have to see them as you know, little adults, which we are actually raising. We're not raising kids, we're raising future adults. But I tell you what, you guys stick around. Doug and I will be right back in here in just a few minutes. Don't go anywhere.
And now, back to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy.
Welcome back, everybody. We left our last segment off talking about, you know, how children are our future, and we need to invest in them more than anything else. But the theme of today's show, if this show had a title, it would be Family Values. And the reason is because these values are what separate us and make us able to be independent, self-sufficient, prepared people. And these values that we teach our children, that we hopefully learned from our parents, but even if we didn't, we can learn from other sources. That's why I keep touching on Jefferson. Jefferson is a great source for these kind of self-sufficient, independent family values that I value. And that's a great place to go to start to breathe in the ethos of being your own person. And I think that the family creates that environment. And there's a big difference between families that are built on love and societies that are built on dependence. And I think that a lot of people don't realize the difference, but there's a huge structural difference between the two. Now, it may look like a family is built on dependence because the children cannot take care of themselves, so they're dependent on the mother. And this, okay, you want to really ruffle some feathers. When you start to talk about pro-choice or pro-life.
Oh, yeah. You just opened that door.
Yeah, I did. Well, let's think about it. One of the fundamental arguments is that it's my body and I can do what I want. This life, I believe it's life, is completely dependent on the mother. Well, without the love aspect, the cherishing of the life that's growing, yeah, it is just a drain on the mother. And I heard an example given a while back, someone who was arguing this point, and said, well, how would you like it, Doug, if you were put in, you put in a hospital bed and you were told that this person here is in a coma and they need life support for 9 months and you're the only person who can keep them alive, and so we're going to tie you to the bed and hook your body up to theirs, and you're going to keep them alive for 9 months until they can have their medical problem fixed, and then they'll be off on their own and you won't have to worry about them. Would you be comfortable with being forced to do that? And the loss of that argument, the missing key factor, is love. Mm-hmm. I love my kids. And if it was my child that I needed to be hooked up to for 9 months to keep them alive, I would do it without thinking. Mm-hmm. If it's some stranger on the street, if you grab somebody out here in the office and said I had to be hooked up to them, no, because then it's just dependency. It's not love. The government cannot create love. All it can create is dependency. And it knows this. There's no way that you can create a welfare class that loves you. There's no way that you as a politician can make people love you. All you can do is make them dependent on you. And if they're dependent on you, then they need you, and then they won't get rid of you. And that's really the bureaucratic structure that has evolved, is a structure of dependency, because they know that to keep their jobs, they need to be needed. You see that all the time in budget requisitions for government offices. You know, if we've got it, we've got to spend it, because otherwise they won't give it to us next year.
Right. Yeah.
Well, the idea there is that they've got to show that they're needed. But that's not the way families work. Parents don't need children. Children don't really need parents. What it is it's love that holds them together, that there's care and admiration, that this is what is the fundamental underpinning. So you asked me, you said, how do we bring back family values? The core of the family has to be love. And if we as people are being trained to not love when everything is disposable, when a marriage is, I can just go get a divorce, and I mean, trust me, I know that there are bad marriages, there are abusive husbands and wives, there are abusive wives out there, that's not popular to say, right, but there are. And sometimes there is a point where, and for everyone's best interest, the marriage needs to be dissolved. And I believe that if we did not have the ability to get divorced, you'd see a much higher murder rate, because people, there are some people who just cannot be together.
Right. Yeah.
But that's not the attitude to go into a marriage with. You go into the marriage saying, whatever comes, no matter what happens, we will fight together and we will work it out. And if we have to fight each other for a while to work it out, we will. But in the end, we are a cohesive unit because we love each other. And when you get the, I had a pastor tell me just recently, I was doing marriage counseling for this couple, and they said, well, you know, if it doesn't work out, we can always get a divorce. And they were joking, but that cannot be a joke. That can't enter into your mindset. And the same way with the children. The reason they're not a parasite is because of the love. But we have to learn how to love again as a society. We do not have charity towards our fellow man anymore. And it is being systematically beaten out of us. I believe through the school system, through the way our comedies are on TV, through all of these societal engineering aspects, that we are being taught not to love, but to be selfish. That you know, you find your perfect match, and then everything will be okay. It'll be Cinderella from there, happily ever after, because they will take care of you. And that's a selfish attitude, because it's not about finding someone to take care of you. It's about finding someone you get to minister to. If you have that, you have a great marriage. If you have somebody who you want to take care of, that you just, it bursts in your heart to want to be there for them and see them excel and to have them have the best, and they feel the exact same way for you, you have a great marriage. That's the love of a parent for a child. And children do not have that love at the very beginning. They don't have the ability to say, wow, I want my parents to do well. because they're children. They're mm-hmm. forming. They're learning. How do they learn how to love? They learn it from their parents who want them to do the best. Their parents who sacrifice for them to go to the best school. Their parents who sacrifice so that they can have good clothing. Not name brand, not fancy, not spoiled, but to have good clothing all the time, to have good shoes, to have good food, to have what they need, and to make the sacrifices and invest the time to be there, to nurture them, to teach them what love is. That is the underpinning of family values. That's love. That's the underpinning of prepping, and it's love.
Yeah. One of the things that I was just kind of thinking, Doug, is just the whole fairness issue. I think some of us, and I think one of the pending problems and why this isn't working, and maybe sometimes the way that the love in the family isn't coming together as it should, is because, you know, people thinks everything should be fair. And that's one of the things that our government is teaching us also, but it starts within the family. And when, you know, when I'm at work and I'm working, you know, a full-time job, and I come home to dirty dishes, it's not fair. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, my husband is thinking, when he's been out of town, you know, for, you know, and he travels quite a bit, he comes home after a couple of days and he comes home to dirty laundry. It's not fair. He has been working. He, you know, he shouldn't have to do this. And when my daughter, when she has been at school and she's, you know, she has a pretty tough load this year, and, mm-hmm. and she comes home and, you know, taking care of the dogs. Oh my gosh, it's just not fair. But you're always looking at, you know, what is not fair? How can things be equal? I want things to be equal. And it kind of revolves around selfishness.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. That mindset of it's not fair for me means that I'm pulling too much of my load. That's really what it comes mm-hmm. down to. I have to do more than my fair share, which means that I am being taken advantage of. But it's not about being taken advantage of. Mm-hmm. It's about ministering to everybody in your unit. And the children learn to minister to other people through the example of their parents. You want to know what thrilled my heart this week?
Tell me.
My son's birthday is coming up, mm-hmm. and his birthday falls on a very special holiday for me. And so between the two of us, we don't have to share our holiday very often, but it does come up periodically. And so it was his birthday, and I said, look, John, you can do whatever you want on your birthday. You just tell me if you want to go out to eat somewhere, if you want to, you know, whatever you want to do, we'll do it for you. It's going to be your day. And we made a list of what presents he wanted to get and the whole nine yards. And I said, okay, well, what about for food? Do you want to, you know, have food here? Do you want to go out? What do you want to do? And he says, you know, Dad, it's your day too, and I would like you to pick where we eat.
Aw.
And that's, I mean, he's just 6 years mm-hmm. old. But he's already starting to learn that the giving to someone else, to allow them to have their choice, has high value, and it's a good thing to do. That's showing charity. That's showing love. And he's not getting that from school. He's not getting that from watching TV. TV talks about sharing, but they don't talk about giving.
Mm-hmm.
You watch Sesame Street, it's all about share this, share that. Okay, mm-hmm. I had it first, and I'm going to play with it, and then I'll let you play with it, and everyone's happy. It's not about sharing, it's about giving. Giving of yourself.
Yes, it is.
About taking part of your soul and offering it to another person.
It is. It is, Doug. And you know, a really good example, or a really good lesson, I guess I'll say, that I have learned personally. You know, I've been married for quite some time, and things are always a roller coaster. We have our ups and we have our downs. And you know, one of the biggest lessons that I've learned was when I was just at my wit's end with my husband, and I was just, you know, frustrated beyond, you know, belief. He's a challenge. I love him to death. But, you know, one of the things that I, you know, and I am a faithful person, and I do pray a lot. And I could see as plain as day the wrongs that he was doing to me. And it wasn't fair. It absolutely wasn't. And so, and I've tried to verbalize this to him, and I've tried to, you know, discuss this with him and tell him how he could better himself. But you know what? I finally realized, I was like, you know what? I'm not perfect. I'm absolutely not perfect. What can I do? And I actually worked through my hurt to see how I could be better for him. And I just threw my feelings to the side, and I worked through usually some painful issues, and I actually catered to him in ways that he needed to be catered to, and it was just miraculous the way that he turned around and just absolutely loved me back.
When his needs were met, then you got him working on all cylinders so that mm-hmm. he could put out as much as was needed to fulfill your needs. I think that's really an important aspect. When we come back from the break, I want to discuss that more about how when your needs are met and when you feel happy and comfortable that you are able to give more than you take. We'll be right back in just a minute. You're listening to Ready Radio on News Talk 1160, the Talk of the Town.
And now, back to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy.
Welcome back, folks. When we left off, we were talking a little bit about how...
Amy's awesomeness.
Yes, how awesome Amy is and how giving and selfless and wonderful. And
yeah, that was not the point.
Make sure her husband's listening.
Right.
So he gets the message.
That's right.
Anyway, what I have noticed is that when I am consumed with grief or anger, when I have a dark cloud over me, I can only barely put out enough energy to keep myself running. And it's just barely at that. I drag through my day and it's, I mean, you could call it depression, but I don't think that that's really the right idea. It's just that there comes a point where you have so much that you are focusing on that you are not producing the energy output.
Right. It consumes you.
Yes.
Yes.
That you are potential that you can create. So let's say that, you know, if you're a four-cylinder engine, you can do just fine and you get through your day and you're a happy person. But when life is assailing you and you are put under the strain, you're really only putting out like two cylinders worth of energy and you're not quite making it on your own. Then you have someone who comes and brings you happiness and joy, someone who breathes life back into you. And then instead of just running on four cylinders, you've got all eight opened up, and you're churning out so much power from this massive engine that is your soul that you're overflowing. You have everything you need to get through the day, plus so much more, and you give it to someone else. And when you give it to them, they get this burst of energy that opens them up so that they can create more. Life creates life. This energy that we have, these feelings of goodness and hope and joy, when they're opened up and flowing fully, we have the ability to raise another person to that level. And they have the ability to raise another person to that level. And that's the idea behind a family, is that you are going to have tough times. You're going to have times when the whole world assaults you, whether it's, you know, running out of money before the end of the month or zombies at the door. It doesn't really matter. There are going to be things that trouble you and are hard to deal with and hard to take. But when you have someone who loves you, who can pour their extra energy into you to kickstart you, to get you going, then you'll have the energy to pour back at them. And I think that that's kind of what you were hinting at when you were talking about your husband. He wasn't, you know, he was under so much strain that he wasn't able to put out the energy that you normally require, the affection that you needed. When you gave him the energy to get him kickstarted, then he had all the energy he needed plus more to give back to you. And then your cups are overflowing.
Right. And the thing is, you can't wait. I mean, you can't wait for, you know, because I was feeling like, you know, I was almost victimized and I'm, you know, feeling absolutely crushed, and I could absolutely see where it was his fault. But you can't wait. I could not wait. I couldn't wait for him to have that eureka moment and say, well, I am a...
Spoken like a true woman.
Yeah, right? Yes, and so often it's true.
Well, there's a reason that it's a stereotype, and that's because it's true.
It's often true. And that's the thing, you can't wait. You know, no matter what side you're on, you just have to do it. And you can't keep score. You absolutely can't keep score. It's not about, you know, keeping an even score across the board, you know, because sometimes there are going to be, you know, times when you are more of the giver. Mm-hmm. And that just might be how it is.
And there are some things that you might do that can never be made right, can never be made mm-hmm. up, can never be washed clean, and it'll always be there. And that's why you don't keep score. It's not about that. It's about ministering and loving and creating more love. And, you know, I don't want people to get the idea that I'm sitting here saying, well, in order for you to love somebody, it has to be a you know, 1950s nuclear family. I don't believe that. I don't believe that at all. I think that you can love anybody. And I think that the idea of a family is a lot broader than just a husband and wife. I think there's a lot more there. But no matter how you define your family, no matter how you structure it, no matter what it is, if it's built on love, if it's built on charity, if it's built on giving, then it becomes the environment where the children will excel, where they will become the type of people that we need, where they are going to become super people who can go out in society and help other people, who can they can maintain themselves no matter what happens, where they're truly prepared. We talk about preparedness all the time. This is emotional preparedness. This is mental preparedness. This is creating people who have the ability to be prepared.
And that's one of the aspects of preparedness that people don't really take into consideration, because, you know, anytime there is a tragedy or something, you know, horrific, you know, people's emotions are all over the place, and stress plays a very, you know, big role in your body, you know, your mental state and that sort of thing. And you know, love has to be that cornerstone. It has to be the foundation, and it radiates. It absolutely radiates from person to person.
And speaking of radiation, I think this is a great time to talk about our True Prep product of the week. This week, we have the two-person, because we've been talking about two people coming together and the family. And how much closer than can you come together than under a two-person bivy from True Prep?
Yes, yes. You're really reaching there, Doug, but I like it. I like it. No, that's great. If you don't know what a bivy is, it kind of looks like a very thin sleeping bag. And basically, it's designed for emergencies that if you are freezing to death, you can climb on in there. And it is just basically designed to keep your heat in.
And so. Instead of doing this by yourself, you can do it as
a
family.
That's right. Yes.
Two people in the bivy, you'll stay alive. Life will be good. There'll be a lot of love in that bivy. I'm telling you.
Yeah. Baby boom, here we come. Yeah, that's, you know, I've always wondered why that is. It's like in the middle of tragedy, there seems to always be a baby boom that happens on the other side.
Well, the reason is because it's an affirmation of life. Yeah. People's procreative activity is a way that they can reach out to another person, connect to them, their souls touch in a way that is impossible any other human activity, and it brings them together, and it reaffirms the fact that they are alive, and it celebrates life in and of itself. There's no more celebrative act that I can imagine than that, to say that we are alive and we have hope in the future. The idea of bringing a new child into the world always has hope for the future. So in dark times and tragedies, in the times of death and loss and destruction, people come together in that way to reach out to each other, to connect with each other, and to affirm hope in the future.
Yeah, so there you go. So have a little family planning emergency preparedness box.
There you go. And I know you have one, don't you?
I do, actually, yeah. Well, and that's the thing, you know, I mean, I have with my children, you know, late teens and early 20s, and that's the thing, Doug. I mean, there's not one particular thing that I prepare for. I think there's a multiple range of different possibilities, but you know, they are and will be childbearing ages, and if we were in a situation where there were no hospital, you know, just a book on how to, you know, you don't need to be the phrase? I don't know nothing about birth, no babies.
Yeah.
So, you know, you don't need to be there. You need to, you know something about birthing some babies. But, you know, just having, you know, just cloth diapers and, mm-hmm. You
and
know,
and those cloth diapers are good for a lot more than just diapering.
Mm-hmm, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing that gets the carnauba wax off a Corvette quite as good as a cloth diaper.
Right.
Which is going to be really important in the final days, because if you've ever seen Mad Max, the car becomes very important in the apocalypse.
Wow. Sure.
Okay.
That's awesome. Well, I tell you what, we got a couple more minutes. Let's kind of circle back around to our family values, looking at love as the cornerstone, and why we're even talking about that for emergency preparedness today.
Well, I think that if we can get the family back on track, if we can start to, as individuals, to not just prepare for a tornado, but prepare for our future, the best way to do that is through the family, and to put a focus back on family values, to put a focus back on an individual family, raising children, creating a bright future through their children. And that's something that is just as important as buying Mountain House food or buying a Berkey water filter or buying a two-person bivy. In fact, it's way more important. If you, before you spend a dime trying to get prepared, make the decision that you are going to prepare your family to be a full and complete family that loves each other, that nurtures each other, that disciplines each other, that you can see a bright future there. Because without that future, we are going to get to a point where nobody knows how to raise children, where the wheels come off of the society and no one knows how to fix it. And then where will we be? If we get to that point, then all of our preparations are in vain.
Yeah, and we need to turn off the TV, and we need to go plant some things with our kids. I know that I'm guilty of that at times when there's things I just don't feel like dealing with. You know, I'm going to pop open a bottle of red wine, I'm going to snuggle up to the TV, and I'm just unplugging. And I do. I unplug from the world when there's things I don't feel like dealing with.
That's okay at times.
Right.
Everybody has to have that recharge time or alone time as well. But yeah, grab your kids, take them in the backyard, and plant that hot dog tree.
Sure. Do you have a hot dog tree?
Well, it hasn't grown very much yet, but we're still waiting. I told him it takes about 18 years for it to start to get a sprig, so we'll see.
Nice.
But we also planted a apple tree at the same time, and it's doing much better.
Oh, good, good, good. Well, you know, I think it's important to get your kids and pull them into, you know, the if you're doing the whole emergency preparedness thing, you really can get the kids involved. And
I hear some little different outro music this time. It sounds a little bit like John Lennon is reminding us what all we need. But folks, it's been a fun week this week. I hope that we've touched your hearts and minds with this topic. Visit our sponsors at True Prep. Visit us online on Facebook. Go to our website at readyradio.net. Shoot us an email. Follow us on Twitter. We will see you next week at the same time and on the same channel.
You've been listening to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy. It's emergency preparedness for everyone. Brought to you by True Prep. For all your prepping needs, visit True Prep online at truprep.com or visit a True Prep store in Roswell or Marietta. Tune in each week as Doug and Amy get you ready for anything that comes your way. Ready Radio, Saturday evenings at 5, only on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.